Current state on 90.5 WKAR. Four different times now we have discussed on this program the bus rapid transit plan being put together by CATA with financial resources coming from the federal and state governments. Yesterday, you may be aware of this already, but you may not. The Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce officially came out against the BRT system following months of research, according to its statement. Quote, feedback from our members in the business community and other concerns has led us to conclude that the current BRT plan is not feasible for the corridor. It cites a lack of other viable options, no clear revenue projections from the proposed BRT route, a significant disruption from the loss of the center turn lane for businesses along the corridor, long-term operational costs, and how funding gaps might be filled if federal and state funding falls short. They did say this has been a difficult decision for them, and they believe that further investment in the Michigan Avenue corridor is critical to the region's economic growth and success. CATA responded to their statement, and I'll quote from CATA's statement, CATA is actively considering a variety of options and their potential impact on traffic flow and on businesses, residents, and other stakeholders. These options should satisfactorily address misgivings about potential business disruptions due to the loss of center turn lanes. Just a couple of days ago, Bob Swanson of the CATA board made clear, not for the first time, that the design is apparently 30% done. So proponents of the system repeatedly have said that there is room to incorporate design changes that will address the misgivings of people who are a lot of the misgivings anyway, maybe not all of them, but a lot of the misgivings of people who oppose this thing. With regard to the funding, CATA wrote, grants are available to fund construction at $133 million. There is no funding gap. CATA's board of directors has reviewed the long-term operating costs and is confident it can operate and maintain the BRT into the future. We will continue to watch the development here, the evolution of the BRT and the conversation around it. At the top of our program today, two-time Olympic boxing gold medalist Claressa Shields is back home in Michigan. After her stunning and historic victory last Sunday at the Games in Rio, Shields received a hero's welcome yesterday when she landed in her hometown of Flint. Current state's Kevin Lavery was there for the homecoming. Kevin, what did the moment feel like at the airport?
Mark, it's really hard to find just the right words. Pride, jubilation, happiness. Claressa Shields landed around 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon to join a press conference that was already underway. She is the first boxer, male or female, to win gold medals in back-to-back Olympic Games. Remember, she won top honors 4 years ago in London for the 2012 Games, and that made her the first female American boxing gold medalist. It was such a wonderful event in Flint, not just for her family and friends, but also for her supporters, and there are many. And for a city that's not had a lot of good news to celebrate as of late, this was truly a moment to savor. Bright shafts of light streamed through the towering windows of the main terminal at Flint's Bishop International Airport on Tuesday. The golden sun struck just the right tone as people gathered excitedly to see hometown girl Claressa Shields bearing the gold medal she'd clinched just 2 days before. To the world, Shields' accomplishment was historic. Her victory in Rio secured her place as the only boxer ever to win gold in two consecutive Olympic Games. But to Flint, a city that's tasted both struggle and success, Claressa's personal journey meant something even more. Flint Mayor Karen Weaver tried to articulate that feeling as the crowd awaited Claressa's triumphant return.
Because she has shown us what faith and determination and belief in yourself can get you. If you stay focused and you have that kind of strength and faith, you can overcome whatever is put in front of you, like we're going to do here in Flint. And she has put us on the map for something positive. We've been telling people, stay tuned. There's going to be a part two to our story, and she has gotten part two started. So we are excited, we're happy, and we cannot wait to have Miss Claressa Shields come on so we can show her some real Flint love. Thank you.
A few more dignitaries expressed similar thoughts. And then the moment arrived.
Welcome right here to Bishop International Airport, your world traveler, the two-time back-to-back women's Olympic gold medal champion. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together. Direct from Rio de Janeiro and the 2016 Summer Olympic Games, none other than Miss Clarissa Shields.
Clarissa Shields strode into the terminal radiating confidence, but more tender emotions were not far beneath the surface.
I want to thank all y'all for coming, all y'all who watched. This journey to the 2016 Games was way different than 2012. Was it hard? No, the fights weren't. But just the journey, and there was a lot of times where I had to, you know, talk to God about everything that I had going on, and just the fact that I actually did it, that's what really moves me, because I'm just thankful, you know. It was so hard to get there. And I moved out of Flint last year to Colorado Springs, and I haven't seen my mom in 3 months, and I just seen her today.
So. As she spoke about her victory and thanked her supporters, Clarissa seemed to bob and weave between moments of bravado and disbelief. It was obvious she had carried her affection for Flint into the ring in Rio.
Every round, even when I felt myself getting tired, I was like, you're not going to hit me. I'm not going to let you hit me while my people watching. We've been hit enough. So I just want to say thank y'all for coming. And let's all come together and let's beat this water crisis and let's beat whatever else that the city got to beat. And the only way we're going to do that is if we come together as a community. It takes a village to raise a child. And I want you guys to know that no matter how big I get, don't ever be scared to ask me for a picture. Or write me and ask me for some advice, because I'm always going to be here for y'all. And I love Flint. This is where I came up at. Thank y'all.
Then it was time for some Q&A from the press. The first question, is she considering going pro?
You know, depending on the opportunities that come, I had a couple promoters write me already. Me and my team got to sit down and figure out what we're going to do. You know, figure out what's the best option to, one, you know, get these endorsement deals, and then also, two, you know, professional women's boxing is not nowhere near on the same, you know, attention level as the Olympics are. You know, I get way more attention than any female boxer who's professional right now with me being an amateur. So the goal is to go professional but still have that same attention, have that same mainstream, and hopefully if I even have the rule change that the women professionals can come back and fight, can fight the Olympics, I will go professional and fight on TV and make a bunch of money, but then come back and defend my two gold medals in 2020. So.
Any talk of commercial endorsements, which never materialized after her first gold medal win during the 2012 Games in London, quickly turned to Clarissa's worldview. She urged children who faced the same hardships she did growing up in Flint not to lose hope.
I felt like I was one of those broken kids. And that's all I want to do. I just want to help those kids who feel anything like I felt when I was younger, because I felt like, you know, my life was never going to get better once upon a time. And I felt that, that no matter how hard I worked, that I would still just be stuck and still be struggling. But then when I found God in my life, he brought this new light to me and he told me to put trust in him. And I did it. And whenever I was ready to go crazy, you know, whenever I was ready to go crazy and give up everything that I worked hard for, God was like, no, you don't. And when God grabs you by your ponytail and tell you, no, you're not going to do something, you're not going to do it. So God definitely was there with me throughout all the hard times. And he just blessed me and he told me, I want you to give these kids some hope, because when I got just a little bit of hope, look how far I ran with it.
Clarissa's own family attested to her personal drive. Her sister Brianna Shields recalled how some people felt about a female boxer chasing a dream.
Some people said she was too cute to be boxing. Some people said she shouldn't box, period. Some people said, let her do it, let her find herself, let her fight. And I mean, it was so many different things happening, but it was up. It's her heart. It's her heart and the way that she built is where she come from that made her who she is today. That made her that ambition she got. You can't find that in nobody else. That drive she got to win, you're not gonna find that in nobody else. You're not.
Clarissa's aunt Rose Copeland echoed those sentiments.
It's unbelievable. And it's so exciting, you know, at the same time. The little girl that I used to keep, my little niece that I used to keep, that used to come over my house and visit with me, and I take her to the store and take her to church, and now she's a big gold medalist. I'm like, oh my God, you know, unbelievable, you know, and in my family, it's so exciting to me and all my family. We are very happy and very excited for her.
Clarissa Shields is looking forward to some time with her family and friends in Flint. On Thursday, the city will host another public event to honor her Olympic victory at the Dort Federal Event Center. Two celebrations in 1 week for a two-time, one-of-a-kind champion.
Two-time? When I say two-time, y'all say champ. Two-time.
Champ.
Two-time.
Champ.
When I say two-time, you say champ. Two-time.
Champ.
Two-time.
Champ.
Okay.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
It's National Breastfeeding Month. This week is Black Breastfeeding Awareness Week. And for Neighbors in Action, coming up on Current State, we'll talk to La Leche League of East Lansing. It provides support to women who want to breastfeed. That and more on the way on Current State. Well, just about everyone's been assigned to read William Golding's novel, Lord of the Flies, at some point during their school days. A group of British schoolboys is stranded on an island after their plane crashes during wartime. Left on their own, the boys create their own version of civilization, which descends into chaos and violence. But what if Lord of the Flies were the story of a group of girls? Not boys. How would it change? Would it change? That question's being explored this week and next by Lansing's Peppermint Creek Theater Company. They're staging a production of Lord of the Flies with an all-female cast. Joining us to talk about the production are stage manager Anna Sabo and Megan Malusik, the actress playing Jack in the Peppermint Creek production. Welcome to Current State to both of you.
Thank you.
This version of Lord of the Flies was adapted for the stage by a Nigel Williams for the Royal Shakespeare Company 20 years ago, 1996. Was his adaptation specifically for a female cast, Anna, or have you adapted his version for this production?
We have presented it exactly as it's written, just with females playing the part.
Okay. And what was the discussion like that led to that decision?
It was really about the choice to present women in a new way in theater, as well as giving them the chance to play parts that they're not necessarily allowed to play, parts that aren't written for us.
Never been allowed to play, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Was that a challenge?
It's been a challenge dealing with some of the attitudes about women playing the parts, but for the most part, having the girls adapt to it, there's been no issue at all. They're
the cast.
Entirely
yeah.
enthused.
The cast. Talk to us about playing a boy, Megan.
Well, the thing is I'm just playing Jack at this point, I suppose. I don't like to think of it as necessarily I'm playing a boy.
Okay.
I'm just playing Jack. And I think the most difficult thing, the most probably, was the fact that we changed the pronouns, but nothing else. So, like, it's hard to read, for example, when it says he everywhere and you are trying to adapt it to
okay.
she.
So,
but we did keep the names.
Mm-hmm.
If you've asked people who've read The Lord of the Flies how the story might be different if this plane had been carrying girls instead of boys, a lot of them might say that it wouldn't descend into chaos at all, that the girls wouldn't give in to these violent impulses that the way the boys would.
Well, the way that Lord of the Flies is written, too, is that it's representing a downfall of society and who we are without that structure. And there's no reason that women shouldn't be seen as that part of society as well. So it's really more of an assumption that men are a default, and that's what we're challenging.
A lot of people say that it has to do with testosterone, and without the testosterone, how is that going to happen? Well, I don't think it has necessarily something to do with that. I think the reason that all of this occurs in the show is what happens with the relationships, what physically happens to them on the island. I don't think it has anything to do with...
Well, the interesting thing to me, it seems, is the attitudes that the audience brings to the whole thing.
I mean,
if they're hearing what are traditionally boys' names and all of the characters are girls, every person in that theater is going to be projecting all kinds of different things up as to what they're seeing.
As the person who's been watching the show every night, I don't even think about the names.
Yeah.
Because you look up there and there's just a group of incredibly talented young women performing this very powerful story.
Megan, tell us about how you present Jack. How did you get into this character anyway?
Jack has been quite a interesting time, I'm not going to lie. I think it's been difficult to try and get into the mindset because at the beginning of the show, you know, they're all still in their civilized senses, I suppose. And Jack is more of the higher class, proper kind
British,
of British
upper class guy.
Upper class, okay. Yes. But once she doesn't have the power anymore, she becomes very manipulative in trying to gain it back. And that ultimately ends in some pretty violent stuff, which I don't want to spoil anything for those who haven't read it, for example.
How familiar were both of you with the story before you launched into this?
I, like many, read it in high school. I had to write a couple essays on it, actually. Other than that, though, that's about it.
Yeah, when I read it, I was in middle school, and I actually thought it was kind of boring because I was like 12 and I wanted to read my vampire romance novels. But, you know, reading it now as an adult, I was just enthralled. Like, and I was very excited when Sally and Devin brought the idea to me originally because it's so rare that we get to play parts like this as women. So it's incredibly exciting.
It's also particularly interesting for you, Megan, because you've been living in Britain for the last 2 years, and here you are portraying, I mean, they're still British characters in the stage adaptation, I take it.
Oh, yes.
Okay. I'm curious, you've been living in Liverpool, starting at the Liverpool Institute for the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think your presentation of Jack would have been different had you not spent the last 2 years in Liverpool?
Well, my accent definitely would have been different, that's for sure. Not as good, probably. But
well, there's a
Liverpool
accent,
oh, yes,
too,
there is.
That is different from the London accent.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different. I don't know if my presentation would be different necessarily. The only thing that might have changed is just a clear understanding of where they came from in terms of being raised, you know, the society that they were brought up in, compared to America. It's very different in that sense, I suppose.
we're talking about the all-female production of The Lord of the Flies being staged by Peppermint Creek Theater Company in Lansing this week and next with actress Megan Malusik and stage manager Anna Sabo. One post on a Facebook thread about this production alludes to the observation that the youth of these kids is what's disturbing about the story, not that they're boys or they're girls. What do you think, Anna?
Absolutely. Because it is children without adults, they don't know how to run society, so they're basically pretending. They're doing what they think adults are supposed to do. So they're like, oh, we should have a vote. We need fires, but we also need protection, because that's just the specific, you know, like vague observations they've made going through life, but they have no idea actually how to, like, control anything, gather food, find a real way to keep each other safe as well as together.
What? How big a cast are we talking about here?
11. We've got 11 people.
Okay.
And we have a very wide range of age, actually. Mm-hmm. It's not, I think I'm the oldest one in the cast, mm-hmm. possibly, yeah. And I'm only 23, so. Mm.
How long have you been acting?
I've been acting since my sophomore year of high school. So, gosh, I don't know, 8 years now, something like that.
How long have you been involved in theater, Anna?
About 2 years.
2 years. The theme of Peppermint Creek's 2016-17 season is ladylike. How does The Lord of the Flies fit in? Well, it's pretty obvious how it fits in, with given what you've done to the production here. But talk to us about the broader season here and what it's all about.
Absolutely. So with Lord of the Flies, as well as it being a corruption of society, we've also taken it as a breakdown of traditional femininity. So the girls enter in a very Mean Girl-esque type of mindset.
I flashed on Mean Girls this morning because we're talking about chaos and conflict and tension amongst the girls. If you're a modern person at all, Lindsay Lohan was flashing through my brain early this morning.
Yes, and absolutely, because that is how society raises us, to kind of see each other. We see each other as this competition. Mm-hmm. And given a circumstance where maybe we're on an island or such, it can absolutely turn violent.
Well, let's talk about the staging of the violence in this production. How realistic is it? Has it been a challenge to pull that off?
Oh, gosh.
Well, we've got lots of blood.
Lots of blood.
Lots of blood.
I'll tell you this. It took me 15 minutes to get all of the blood off me last night.
Yeah. Wow.
I wouldn't suggest bringing young children. No. Probably not. It is kind of scary. There are things mm-hmm. in there that will jar you, I think.
We have to talk about your Liverpool experience a little bit more, Megan. I found this out just before the segment started, but you're attending the Liverpool Institute of the Arts,
yes.
which was founded by Paul McCartney,
yes,
correct?
He wanted to start, it kind of started as a fame school, so people know it as that. Mm-hmm. He wanted to start a school where people could progress in the arts, and he actually began it in his old boys' school, like where he grew up and met all of the other members of the Beatles. So, I mean, not all of them went to that school, but I can't remember who did. One of the other ones did. But yeah, so.
And you were telling me when you graduate, you're going to be, Paul McCartney will be shaking your hands when you get your diploma.
Yes, I'll get the standard graduation picture that everyone puts as their profile picture afterwards.
How about that? How about that? That's so interesting. What are you studying? You're studying acting
there? I'm studying
there?
Acting,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What's it been like?
Amazing. Oh, I guess I love it over there so much. And the program is really good. I've learned quite a lot about all sorts of things. So,
you were part of the Renegade Theater Festival here in Old Town Lansing. What did you do there?
There we performed the first 30 minutes of the play. It's a three-act play, so it was the first act. So it's when the girls are still civilized, but it's the plane crash and them coming onto the island, deciding what they're going to do from there, but it's before everything kind of takes a turn.
And tell us about some of the other, can you talk to us about some of the other productions in the 16-17 season? Which one comes to mind here first?
Well, the next one after us is Disgraced, which is an excellent modern take on just looking at religion and art, that type of thing. And then there's a show later on in the season that I'm very excited about called Eurydice,
yeah.
which is the story
of
Orpheus,
yeah.
but told from his wife's point of view, which especially in Greek myths, you don't often get the
you
female
don't get the
view.
Female
no,
point of view very
no.
often.
How interesting. We've been talking with actress Megan Malusik and stage manager Anna Sabo of the Peppermint Creek Theater Company. Their stage adaptation of The Lord of the Flies with an all-female cast is this week and next. Showtime 8 p.m. tonight through Saturday, 2 p.m. Sunday, both weekends, at the Miller Performing Arts Center on Curry Lane in Lansing. Anna, Megan, thank you. Break a leg.
Thank you
so much.
And coming up on Current State, Soup Grant Lansing supports community service organizations and small neighborhood businesses, and it celebrates its third birthday this month. WKAR's Peter Worf serves up that story in a moment. That's coming up after the break on Current State. Don't forget, 1 week from tonight, it's Pop-Up Stories. The theme is The Heat Is On, and this all unfolds at Red Cedar Spirits in East Lansing. There's all kinds of information about it on our Facebook page, Pop-Up Stories Lansing. The Heat Is On. We had a great session last time, which was just a couple of weeks ago. It's a chance for true first-person storytelling here once a month here, put on by Current State and our friends at ARCA, the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities at Michigan State University. I'm Mark Bayshore. August is National Breastfeeding Month, and today is the start of Black Breastfeeding Awareness Week. Now, in honor of these events, we're learning more about La Leche League for Neighbors in Action this week. La Leche League is dedicated to helping mothers worldwide to breastfeed through mother-to-mother support, encouragement, and education, and to promote a better understanding of breastfeeding as an important element in the healthy development of a baby and a mother. Joining us this morning, I take it you are Lindsay LaForte.
I am.
Very good. I am pleased to meet you. We had two guests lined up for this segment. One person walked in, so I had to roll the dice and assume that you were indeed Lindsay LaForte. Hopefully during the course of the interview, we'll be joined by a new mom, Jane Enderly, who's also involved in your program. But Lindsay, welcome to Current State. Why is a group like La Leche League important here in the community?
Well, thank you so much for having me. La Leche League is so important because our culture, we don't have the same support system as we used to have. You know, everyone kind of goes about their business and their days doing whatever they need to do to take care of themselves. And that's great most of the time. But then when you have children, all of a sudden you need more support. And we don't live near family. At least I don't live near family. And I know that's the experience for a lot of people in our group. You know, extended family is a couple hours, stayed away, maybe even more. One of my good friends that I've met through La Leche League is from India. So she doesn't have any family close. And La Leche League can provide that important support to kind of find your tribe and find people who can know what you're going through and share some of those trials and tribulations, and also just be there for you when you need some help.
I have to ask, it's been quite a few years since breastfeeding took place at our house. So let me ask, generally, is extended breastfeeding the norm among new moms here in 2016?
I think that it's becoming more the norm. Our breastfeeding rates, initiation rates in the local hospitals have really increased a lot. As far as continuing to exclusively breastfeed, you know, it starts to drop off, and it's something that we're still hoping to see more rates.
Does the league have an opinion as far as the right number of months or years to breastfeed a child?
Is there
a consensus about that or not?
What we say is that the breastfeeding relationship should continue as long as, you know, your baby needs it. So for every dyad, that might look a little different. Some people might be done within that second year. Some people might go, you know, into the third or fourth year. It just kind of depends. Typically, most people who come to us have a goal of reaching 12 months, so nursing just through that first year. And a lot of times we see them change their goals or change their feelings and decide to nurse within and, you know, throughout that second year too, just because once things get going, it kind of becomes easy. And, you know,
so typically it becomes longer as opposed to being shortened.
Yes. With support, we see most people extend their goals rather than shorten them. And, you know, we're just kind of there to help everybody reach their goals wherever they might be. For some moms, it might only be 12 months. It might be less than that. And we're happy to get you there. We just want to see, you know, you achieve your goals.
Mm-hmm. You discovered the group when you were pregnant. What did you find when you first contacted La Leche League?
Sure. Actually, when I first went there, it was interesting because I knew I had been breastfed as a child. I knew that my siblings had been, but I didn't have any idea of how long we had been. And it was the first time that I ever went to a meeting and saw a nursing toddler, so a child beyond 1 year being breastfed. Mm. It was one of the first times that, as in my adult life, that I had seen any children, you know, being openly nursed without covers or whatever. So it was nice to be able to see that it could be done discreetly, it could be done normally, that none of this was so out of the ordinary. And it was just awesome to build a support network that I could rely on once my baby came along.
We are joined here, as it turns out, by a relatively new mom, Jane Enderle of Woodland, Michigan. Welcome to the program, Jane.
Hello, welcome.
How old is your new baby?
He'll be 1 year old next week.
A year old next week. How did you find out about La Leche League?
One of my sisters, my sister-in-law, had said something, and she mentioned something about it, and I was having problems getting into latch and all that fun stuff. And so I looked it up on Facebook. Then I got an email off that, sent an email message, and then I got a phone number, and a lady contacted me.
You were off to the races.
Yes.
How has the group helped you?
Oh, man, immensely. I really wanted to breastfeed, and it wasn't going the best, and I could go in and talk to everybody. People would contact me. They'd give me a call, make sure everything was going good. Any time of the day, I could call somebody and see if something wasn't going right.
Yeah. Is this your first child?
Yes, it is.
Okay. How exciting. Lindsay, tell us about National Breastfeeding Month here and how you mark this exactly.
Sure. National Breastfeeding Month starts kind of kicked off by World Breastfeeding Week, which is the first week of August. And then La Leche League, our groups here in mid-Michigan, we have the East Lansing group, which I am a co-leader for, and also the Delta Waverly group, which is on the west side of town. So we kind of work together to put together a Live, Love, Latch picnic, which we had a week or so ago to celebrate National Breastfeeding Month. So it's just a great way to come out, celebrate people who are supporters of breastfeeding, and a good time to have some advocacy to raise awareness.
I imagine careers must kind of dampen down the breastfeeding opportunities here for a lot of women if they know they want to get back to work within a year.
Sure.
Or even sooner than that in some cases.
It can certainly pose a challenge, but there's a lot of good things going on right now with the affordable, the ACA, the healthcare that most people refer to as Obamacare. All insurance companies are required to provide breast pumps to mothers who are lactating.
Okay.
So that has gone a long way to help moms be able to get a breast pump, be able to continue to pump once they return to work. It also, there is federal law that says employers must provide a place for breastfeed or for lactation room for pumping, expressing milk, or breastfeeding their baby. So a lot of people find that once they get back to work, if they can make those arrangements with their employer, it's extremely possible to continue to breastfeed their baby when they're with their baby and then pump at work. Mm-hmm.
Jane, what would you say to a new mom who needs help or support but might be afraid to ask for it?
Just do it. Yeah. I was very afraid. Just ask. They're just so helpful and kind, and they can give you lots more information than just reading stuff.
And tell us about the importance of Black Breastfeeding Week.
Well, as we know, the initiation rate for Black women to breastfeed is much lower than any other group in our nation. And they have had a lot of historical barriers that have created this issue. So Black Breastfeeding Week is a good week to remind everyone that it is still something that they are working on overcoming, and to celebrate the women who are out there on the forefront to nurse their babies. We, you know, would just love to see the infant mortality rate for African-American babies go down, because it's just the highest among our groups right now. And breastfeeding is a great way to start reducing that rate.
Well, we're out of time here, but what's your website? I take it you've got a website.
Sure. It's La Leche League East Lansing. And you can also find us on Facebook at Facebook/ La Leche League East Lansing. We're having a lot of things coming up. We have our conference for the state coming up, and also probably a birthday party because the La Leche League is turning 60 in October. So check us out there and we'll have some information up for you.
We want to thank Lindsay LaForte, co-leader from La Leche League East Lansing. Also, Jane Enderle joined us here today from Woodland, Michigan, a new mom. First young boy, correct?
Yes.
I'm looking at him through the glass. There's mom. She's not going far. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Now it's time for another pop-up story here on Current State. This one comes from our last event at Valley Court Park East Lansing, where the theme was The Call of the Wild. Storyteller Josh Lowne shared a story about a time he went on a trip to the UP that turned out better than expected.
Last summer, I went camping in the UP with a handful of emotionally dysregulated foster children, and it was really awesome. See, I work at a youth residential facility in Lansing, where we house children roughly of the ages of 6 to 17 who have been in and out of the foster care system with the hopes that we can help normalize their life a little bit more, regulate them, and make them feel, while they're with us, a little less institutionalized and wherever they go next is going to be the best place for them. So part of that is finding activities and things to do that will ultimately help them and make them feel like they're not part of an institution, but more part of a family. Part of that is going camping in the summertime. And so what we've been trying to do recently is try to do things that will be thinking outside of the box, something that we wouldn't normally do. So last year, thinking about that, we all decided, why not take the five-hour trek north to the UP? Because at that time, none of the kids that we knew had ever been beyond the probably 2 hours from Lansing, let alone across the bridge, let alone camping in a tent in the woods where it was quiet and there wasn't any city for the next hour or so. We also wanted to, since we were there, we went to Taquamen and we camped at Taquamen in Falls State Park. And while we were there, we thought, what better thing to do than to see the falls? And what better way to see the falls than to hike between the lower falls and the upper falls? Now, I'm not sure any of you have been there or have done this, but that's a 4 mile hike in the woods. I'm not sure if any of you, if you have been there, that is 4 miles of bushwhacking and hills and tree stumps and rocks, and not necessarily conducive to a bunch of teenagers and young kids who have never actually been out into the woods before, let alone staff who have had the same situation. But we did it anyway, despite any kind of real logic that would say to the other direction. But it was great because you had these great, huge, old-growth trees on one side. You had this huge, rapidly moving river on the other, and the kids enjoyed it. They loved it. We had one child who he had a hard time not only regulating his emotions, but really feeling where his body was at all times. And he was dragging his feet on any like flat surface he could find a way to trip. Now think about that, where you have tree roots and rocks and hills and stuff. Needless to say, he tripped multiple times, and since he had a hard time figuring out the words to say, his reaction was to trip, fall, find the most vulgar word he could yell out, give whatever the problem was a middle finger, and stand back up. So we let him. Every time, it made him feel better. It's what he needed. He stood up. We gave him a big hug, and we said, hey, are you doing all right? He said, yes, and we just kept on walking. One of the biggest surprises that we had was our oldest kid at the time, without anybody saying so or without anybody prompting him, decided he wanted to be the leader. He wanted to take the lead. I gave him my backpack, which was full of all of our supplies. I gave him my hat, which was a big rimmed hat that looked like something an outdoorsman would wear, and he wanted it, and he was in the lead. And one of the greatest things to see was when it was getting hot and the kids were getting tired of walking, he was the first person to come back and say, hey guys, we can do this. We only have a few more miles. It's going to be great. You can do it. Without anybody telling him that that's what he should do. And what's great about that is we'd never seen the possibility for that from him at any point in time until that moment. But we made it. We made it the entire 4 miles through trips and falls and scrapes and a little bit of whining, but a lot of bit of fun. And we get to this huge upper falls, which are wonderful to see, this massive amount of water falling. And the kids are all in awe, and there's this huge collective sigh of relief that we have done it, and this feeling of accomplishment when we've all done the shared goal. And we all had a great time. The kids stayed in the tents the whole time, and we played in the forest, and it's something we still talk about to this day, and something that it had every reason to fail because we weren't near a hospital and we were far away from home and there were a bunch of kids who'd never been that far away, but we all found a way to make it work. And we all worked together, not only the staff, but the kids and the staff, and all of us found a way to make it work. And one of the things I think about is, you know, it's cliche to say, but everyone says, you know, never judge a book by its cover alone, right? And I think about that a lot now. If you give kids the opportunity, no matter what their nefarious background may be, you give them the opportunity to surprise you, and they will every time. Thank you.
And Current State's next pop-up stories event is a week from today, August 31st, 6 p.m., Red Cedar Spirits in East Lansing. The theme, The Heat Is On. Now, there is limited space at this venue, so be sure to reserve a spot. You can find the link to reserve your spot on our Facebook page, Pop-Up Stories. The heat is on. We have room for more storytellers. So if you've got your own story about the heat is on, email us, currentstate@wkar.org. Please put pop-up stories in the subject line. We hope to see you there. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'm Mark Bayshore. Once a month, the organization Soup Grant Lansing offers a soup and bread meal to the public at Grace Lutheran Church in Lansing. Every gathering also includes the launch of a new community micro grant. It's funded by donations from the people enjoying the meal. Now, this month, Soup Grant Lansing celebrates its third anniversary of breaking bread and micro grants. WKAR's Peter Wharf takes us there.
All right, the moment everyone has been waiting for. We are very excited to announce, thanks to everyone who came out here, this is our largest soup grant ever. So we are really excited.
It's a church basement social hall, much like any other. But this one is cooking tonight, with Soup Grant Lansing's largest crowd ever. Soup Grant Lansing gathers community members in the basement of Grace Lutheran Church once a month. Diners pay $5 each for a soup and bread supper and a vote. Votes are cast for community service groups and small business startups who make their case before the crowd. After their presentations, votes are cast and the winning organization gets the evening's take. Heather Borden founded Soup Grant Lansing. Tonight is Soup Grant's third birthday. Heather is rushing around, setting out soup, cutting bread, talking to presenters and supporters, and takes a moment with me.
Tonight is our birthday soup, so we've got three projects that have already won. And so they're coming back for more funds to fund a project that they're still working on or the same project that they already won their soup grant for.
What are those three?
So we've got the Lansing Track Club, and we've got Gateway and their True project. It's a teen empowerment project, and we've got Helping Women, period. Those are the three that are coming back tonight.
Gateway Services provides help to Lansing's LGBTQ community. Helping Women, period, supplies area shelters, food banks, and homeless organizations with feminine hygiene items. And the Lansing Area Track Club supports dozens of young athletes in training and competing locally and around the region. As Heather notes, it's the usual wide array of presenters.
We've also seen groups, we've seen entrepreneurs come through. We had Good Bites Food Truck. They're a food truck in Mason. They have a project, and they actually didn't win a soup grant for their project that they're trying to do. They're trying to bring more farmers information to their food truck so people can buy local and understand what they're eating. They're coming back, actually, to try again. So we try and invite soup grants non-winners back one more time to try. So they're coming back. But we've seen community groups, entrepreneurs, community organizations, people who are not organized in a 501c3 or anything like that, but just have a project they want to try. We've seen it all. So.
What do you feel has been the impact on small business startups, projects, and things like that overall?
Well, the thing I really love about Soup Grant is when they come, they're looking for some money to get their project started, and money always helps, but really they leave with way more than money. they leave with a lot of community exposure and support from the people here. It's just something about the community of people who come here. They're coming to support and to see good change in Lansing. So they leave with a lot of community support, and that's what I love about it. And it's always fun to hear the projects, but it's fun to see people just meet, connect. It's like a melting pot in here tonight, you know, people from all different groups and walks of life, and it's enjoyable.
About halfway into Soup Grant's life, Derek Tinsler got involved. Heather says that Derek's played a large role in growing Soup Grant awareness. Derek handles social media and marketing for the group.
So actually, I have a coworker who used to volunteer with Detroit Soup. And so she kind of told me all about kind of the whole purpose and everything. And then about a week later, I found out Lansing was doing its own version of it, a little bit of smaller scale, but definitely growing and doing a lot of great things for the community. So we came here for the first time and talked to Heather, and then we were just so excited about what was happening. We think it's such a great way to get the community involved and really saying what do they want to see differently in their community. And we just kind of fell in love with it and started volunteering and doing some of the communications outreach work, and been really happy doing it.
Have you seen Soup Grant grow or change or develop?
I think the biggest thing is just kind of the name recognition of it. People are really starting to understand it. We've had a little bit more presence in the media a little bit. And then every time we get a new presenter, they bring out their own crowd of people, and then those people tell other people. So we see a lot of new faces every month, which we think is fantastic. Just in the year and a half that I've been here, we've seen a lot of growth, and people are really starting to understand what we do, and they're starting to really reach out to us about wanting to participate, wanting to help, and everything. So it's been great.
Describe the room tonight.
The room is packed tonight. Which we're really happy to see. This is our 3-year anniversary event, so we're doing 3 presenters tonight. We typically do 2. The crowd knows them. It's always exciting when we get past winners back. You get to hear what they did with the money, just kind of an update of how they're doing. So we're really excited to have so many people out here tonight. We have a lot of families, really diverse group of people, new faces, old faces. So we're really excited about all the energy, hoping we don't run out of soup here.
This is a full room in the church basement of Grace Lutheran in Lansing near Saginaw and Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta have 60, 70 people here tonight.
Yeah, I would say so.
Might have to be a loaves and fishes night.
It might have to be. You know, we're always worried that maybe soup might not sound as good on a hot August night, but people tend to turn out for it, so we're really happy with what we're seeing right now.
Even with a record crowd, there's plenty to go around. Potato, lentil, even a delicious borscht. The kids hover around the emptying bread bowl until Heather's mom, Terry, cuts up some more and puts it out. Everyone has their fill. Diners cast their votes by dropping popsicle sticks into one of 3 jars. The votes are all in, and Derek gets ready.
To announce $301 soup grant to the Lansing Track Club.
The Lansing Area Track Club is headed by Coach Ramon Brunson. The Lansing resident and Flint native ran middle and long distances at the high school and college level, but he says the help his group receives from Soup Grant Lansing goes far beyond sports.
The most rewarding thing for me with the team is just seeing the growth in the kids. Just seeing when we started and when we finished. And just, like I said, just seeing the smile on their face that they accomplished something and that they own it, you know what I'm saying? And also making friends, because a lot of people didn't know each other. And just to see them have friends with each other, like, and just have that bond. Like, I just wanted to be a family. So, yeah.
Soup Grant Lansing is the 3rd Thursday of every month at Lansing's Grace Lutheran Church. For Current State, I'm Peter Worf.
And that's our show for today. Thanks for joining us. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, we talk about community journalism in the Lansing area. Steve Harry is an independent reporter and commentator on public policy. on his website, steveharrypublicpolicy.com. Also, Alice Drager joins us. Alice is founder and reporter for eastlansinginfo.org. Eli, how do these grassroots journalists view their role? Why do they do what they do? And are they having an impact? We'll have that conversation tomorrow morning on Current State. I hope you can join us for it. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Wharf. Katie Cook directed our show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, Brooke Allen, and Drew Hill. Don't forget the Current State podcast. Hopefully you're listening to us now on our podcast. Informative, insightful, and indispensable. It's Current State. We hope you can dial it up. Get it at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Bayshore. Hope you can join us tomorrow. It's Current State on WKAR.